Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning. It's the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West, and I am your host, and I'm also the Director of Horticulture for Pointer Landscape here in St. Louis. And last week we had a great guest on, and this week is no different. We have Flo Smith here. Flo is a horticulturist for the Kemper Center for Home Gardening. That is at the Botanical Garden here in St. Louis. She works as one of the plant doctors who assists visitors with questions about gardening, plants, pests, and diseases. She also managed their really cool Instagram account. If you guys haven't seen that, check it out. But she's aiming with that Instagram account to educate people about plants while entertaining them. Flo moved here from Salt Lake City, and she worked there in a water-wise gardening and is fascinated about learning about our Missouri plants. So, Flo, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, so exciting. So what is the Kemper Center? Tell us about that.
Yeah, the Kemper Center is a home gardening help center. It's the largest one in the U.S. We provide resources for people all over, whether it be pest fact sheets, pruning guides, etc. And then people can come in and ask questions of us directly. So our plant doctors are master gardeners, and then horticulturists ourselves, we're assisting people with their gardening needs. And then we have 23 demonstration gardens outside showing people how they can garden here in the Midwest and good practices and design ideas for them.
That's really awesome. So it's kind of like you have a garden hotline, mm-hmm. just like this one, all week long. So people come into the garden and they can ask you questions, and they can see, like, in your demonstration gardens, it's kind of more of like a home garden setting. It's not necessarily, you go to the botanical gardens expecting to see things that are like in the Climatron and all of these really cool things that maybe are not always attainable, mm-hmm. In a home setting. And that's kind of what you guys are trying to achieve at the Center for Home Gardening, correct?
Yeah, exactly. We've got a vegetable garden and like an accessible garden for people who might be using mobility devices, and fragrance and sensory gardens for children and for people who want to bird watch and things of that nature.
That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. What? So plant doctor, what does that mean exactly? I really would love if my business card was like Michelle Reeser-West, plant doctor. Mm-hmm. That sounds pretty cool. Is it as cool as it sounds?
I think it definitely sounds cooler than it is sometimes, but it's really awesome. It's a privilege. It's the opportunity to connect with people everywhere. It's a free service, so people can come into the garden, which you do have to have a membership or pay for entry, but then anyone in the world can email or call in and ask questions, and that's what makes us the largest help center in the U.S. is We can assist people everywhere, and we have lots of people that can support anyone with their needs. And if we don't know the answer, there's certainly another horticulturist on staff, a greenhouse manager, someone who can back us up and assist.
That's really great. So Flo is here. She's going to answer questions with me. And if you guys have any of those gardening questions, we're going to talk about some fall tasks that are coming up and get into conversations like that. Last week, we were talking with Jean Ponzi about Leave the Leaves. We can continue that conversation a little bit, but also bring in some other kind of sustainable fall gardening practices. But if you guys have questions for us, 314-436-7900, that's the number to call. But like I said, we were talking about Leave the Leaves, and Jean Ponzi and I didn't. We had a list of things a mile long of what we kind of wanted to get to and talk about in terms of fall gardening in a sustainable way, but also just fall gardening tasks. But one of those things, not just Leave the Leaves, but we're going to talk about how it's really beneficial to leave some of our perennials up over the winter. Can mm-hmm. we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, of course. I mean, there's plenty of reasons you would want to cut everything down. I mean, we talk about putting a garden to bed in fall. And for many people, that means taking our perennials to the ground and letting winter take its course. But there's lots of birds and insects that still rely on food sources. So in our landscapes, we can choose to leave up like coneflower and rudbeckia and even ornamental grasses that are providing food to birds and little critters, and we can watch them from our houses. But then also, it provides great winter interest. So watching frost form on like a yarrow head is really fun, and seeing snow that's been stuck on a coneflower is excellent. But.
And it's providing, you know, there are a lot of native bees that will kind of overwinter in the mm-hmm. stalks of some of those flowers that that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And you know, that was part of why, you know, we are leaving the leaves, is that we're providing nesting material for a lot of creatures, bugs and invertebrates, and you know, even some mammals to have a space to kind of hide out, and a food source mm-hmm. For birds and other things. So you know, what do we have to cut back everything though, Flo? I mean, it seems, you know, there are a lot of people out there that like the neat and tidy, and I get that to a degree. But you know, are there some ways that that we can cut back some things and leave some other things? Like what are some types of plants that we maybe can cut back in order to make it have a little tidier appearance for those of us out there that might want that?
I mean, I really think that's up to the discretion of a gardener. I like to see lots of things cut back. I mean, stuff that's diseased, so bee balm and phlox that tends to have a lot of powdery mildew through the summer, that can be cut down because we don't want that to hang out in the soil and probably proliferate in following seasons. But also I wanted to note for things that we're not cutting down all the way, if you don't want to keep your coneflower up, you can cut down 8 to 12 inches. And then in theory, you're leaving that up through the next year, and then that following season when those stalks are kind of dry and spindly, that's when bees and things are going to be overwintering them. So you're not going to really see it that first season. So if you're wanting to support those pollinators that are nesting or overwintering in those spaces, try and leave it up for essentially two seasons. And it sometimes doesn't look the best, but the new growth that comes out next spring will cover what you cut down. Everything will eventually fall back and break down and naturally go.
I like that. It's like kind of, you kind of just, it's a shift, I think, in perspective, this time of year. A lot of people really do, want to go towards that like super tidy, super clean look, but, it can be really quite beautiful, through the winter when you leave your perennials up. So we do have a couple phone calls. We're going to take one before we go to break. We have Fred on the line. Fred, go ahead with your question.
Well, thank you. I've got a fescue lawn that seems to have an area, you know, like 5 by 5 in the tree area for the street that looks like it's growing liriope. And while it's green and it mows fine, I'd like to get rid of it. Do I kill that with a vegetation killer? Or I want to get it out of there, and I'm thinking fall might be a good time and then reseed.
Yeah, that's a good question, Fred. You know, liriope is one of those plants that just keep giving. You know, it can be difficult to get rid of. I do know some people, I don't always advocate for using chemicals. You know, we try to use other approaches when possible. But using some chemicals as spot sprays in order to get rid of invasive species or species that really aren't that great or hard to get rid of, liriope could be one of those. You know, so doing some spot spray with a Roundup or something like that, making sure you're safe and reading the label. You know, the other thing that you can do is just hand dig it out. I mean, I don't know how big the space is, but a nice sharp spade goes a long way to getting some of that out. You do have to make sure that you're removing all of those runners. The liriope does spread from the underground runners, so making sure you get all of those out, and then it's inevitable that you won't get all of it, and you know, one or two might pop back up. I'm not sure about solarization for liriope and how effective that would be. And you might need to, because it's such a strong, it has a strong regrowth rate, you might need to leave it on as in terms of solarization a little bit longer than you might for other vegetation, but that might be a way to do that. It's just covering it up, you know, with some plastic or even cardboard for several months. But yeah. I hope that you have success with getting rid of that liriope. I'm a little bit of a liriope hater. I know it serves its purpose. If you have it, it's fine. It looks good all winter most of the time. So, but definitely, I think those are your options for getting rid of it, Fred.
Yeah, I don't know how it got there. It seemed like it was in a bushy area of my yard that I wanted it to grow, but somehow it made its way to the lawn.
Surprise.
Okay, thank you much.
Yeah, thanks, Fred. Thanks for your call. We're going to get to more of your calls. We're going to take a break. Phone number to ask your question, 314-436-7900. You're listening to the Garden Hotline on 104.1 KMOX.
This is the Garden Hotline, sponsored by Chesterfield Valley Nursery, a celebration of his beauty on 104.1 FM KMOX.
And we're back to the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West, Director of Horticulture for Pointer Landscape. And I am joined today by Flo Smith of the Kemper Center for Home Gardening at the Botanical Garden. We are here to answer all of your fall gardening questions to the best of our abilities and hopefully entertain you a little bit in the meantime. So, Flo, again, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And we're going to go straight to the phone lines. We've had Lyle waiting for quite some time. Lyle, you're on the Garden Hotline. Go ahead with your question.
Okay. Good morning, Michelle. I have a large area of live forevers. That Autumn Joy. And for years, I pruned those back at this time of the year. I've got a new lawn service, and he suggested I leave those standing through the winter and prune them back in the early spring when I prune back the monkey grass. He said I should leave it, for the fall, small animals, the bugs, and so forth. And I was just wanting to get your opinion on pruning those live forevers back, either now or in the late winter, early spring.
Yeah, if that's the Autumn Joy stone crop or sedum that I'm thinking of, it's a great one you can leave on the ground until spring. When you start to see new growth come up or you start to see it greening up a little bit is when you can go out and hack it all back. But he was right, it is a great source for critters and for birds that are wanting to feed on the seeds there, and it's a nice way to kind of insulate that ground as almost a living mulch over the winter. So,
and good job to your lawn guy. Lawn guys aren't always, yeah, you know, up. No offense to any lawn guys out there, especially my friend Kevin from Spectrum. But lawn guys aren't always in the know on how to take care of perennials, and it sounds like yours gave you some solid advice.
Okay, so I should leave them stand because they're still The pink bloom has slowly, well, there's still some evidence of the pink bloom, but I should leave those standing until late winter, early spring then.
Yes, sir, you absolutely can.
Okay, well, at that time, you know, on the monkey grass, usually I just raise the lawnmower up to the highest setting, what, 4, 4.5 inches, and yep. Mow that back. Can I do the same thing with that with those Autumn Joy?
Do you have like a big stand of them, or just a few of them?
No, it's a pretty large area, probably 10 by 20.
Oh wow, that's a lot. Yeah, I think, you know, probably the lawnmower probably not the best option. You know, liriope or monkey grass is super super tough. And it's hard to really injure that. I also think that this stone crop is also a pretty tough plant, but just because those leaves in the crown is really tender, like almost like a succulent, I would think maybe doing it with like some hand shears or your hand pruners would probably be a little bit better than the lawnmower.
Okay, well then that's what I'll do, Michelle.
Thank you so much, Lyle, for the phone call. We really appreciate it. Up next, we're going to go to Lucy. Lucy, you are on the Garden Hotline. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a newbie. I learn a lot from your show. I just tuned in. Are you saying liriope is one you should leave up or shouldn't leave up for the critters?
Liriope is one you definitely should leave up. You know, it stays pretty green, so it gives you good winter interest. And you can leave that until late winter, early spring. You're going to notice that it's going to kind of start pushing out a little bit of new growth, and that's when you'll want to cut it back. Our previous caller, Lyle, was saying that he uses his lawnmower. So if you have a large patch of it, definitely raising that lawnmower up to the highest setting is an easy way to cut those back, especially if you have a bag. It's less cleanup. If it's a smaller patch or you don't have a lawnmower, you can certainly do it with some hand pruners or hand shears as well. I know a lot of people will use, on a big patch, they'll use a string trimmer or something like that. Not as clean of a cut, but also liriope is such a hardy plant, so it's hard to hurt it. But that was definitely one I would leave up till late winter, early spring.
Okay, thank you, and thank you for repeating. And the question I wanted to call in and ask is, I was going to share ferns with a neighbor, and I didn't get around to digging them up. These are like ostrich ferns, and I believe the other ones are like cinnamon ferns. Is it too late in the year to give those to her to transplant into her yard? Did I miss the window?
I don't think it's too late. You usually want to avoid planting in the ground when it's no longer easy to work. So from my understanding, the ground is not yet frozen. It's not cold enough for that. So you're definitely able to go and dig those up and pass them on and make sure she gets them planted as soon as possible and is doing some establishment watering through it on them through when the ground is a little too frozen to water.
For sure. And even making sure you do like a little bit of a mulch cover of some kind, like this would be a great example of how leave the leaves could help. So if you're leaving the leaves in your bed and you're still doing a little bit of transplanting, that little bit of leaf cover will help to kind of protect the crowns of those plants through the winter. So, but yeah, I think we're probably getting close on some of our tender perennials of when it's safe to cut back, but I think I think you still have plenty of time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thanks, everybody, for all the calls so far. I'm really enjoying talking about all these fall tasks with my new friend Flo from Mobots Kemper Center for Home Gardening. We're going to keep taking your phone calls. The number to dial, 314-436-7900. This is the Garden Hotline on 104.1 KMOX.
This is the Garden Hotline, sponsored by Chesterfield Valley Nursery, a celebration of his beauty on 104.1 FM KMOX.
We are back to your favorite show on all of KMOX. It's the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West, and I am joined here today with Flo Smith, a horticulturist at the Kemper Center for Home Gardening at the Missouri Botanical Garden. And we are talking fall planting. We're talking about liriope. We've got all kinds of questions coming in. If you guys have a question for us, 314-436-7900. That is the number to call. We've got quite a few people waiting on the line, so we're going to jump right in. George, go ahead with your question.
Good morning. Hey, about 10 years ago, I planted a button bush in a one-gallon pot, and now it's actually a button tree. It's about 20 by 20. And the question is, how much can I cut it back, and when would be the best time to do it?
I mean, ideally, you're cutting back no more than about 30% each time you're pruning. And
okay, so it's a rule of thirds.
Yeah, the rule of thirds, yeah. And typically, we recommend pruning most of those woody shrubs or tree shrubs, as you would say, in late spring or late winter, early fall. So February, March, early spring. Oh, my gosh.
You got this, Flo.
Late winter, early spring.
Or at least out then.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Then the next question would be, I've planted two perennials in 12-inch pots on my patio. One was an East Hyssop and one was the Bee Balm. What would be the best way to overwinter those? Just leave them where they're at or put them for some protection, or what would you do?
I would plant them. Can you put them in the ground right now?
Well, I'd like to leave them in pots. Okay. They did really well this
year. Oh, I see you had them in the pots.
On a patio.
Gotcha, yeah. How big are they? Are they a good-sized pot?
It's a 12-inch pot.
12-inch pot. I'm not listening very well this morning. I know you did say that, George. So you can do a couple things. You know, a 12-inch pot on some of those kinds of perennials could be okay if we have a mild winter. The other thing you can do is kind of use your garden as a little bit of protection, maybe dig a shallow hole and put it in there and then build up around it with that mulch that you dug out of the hole, or put some leaves over it for protection. You're really just trying to keep it from 100% freezing solid like an ice cube for a really long time. And I think, you know, most of our perennial, especially natives, can do a decent job overwintering in a pot. So I don't know that you need to do that much other than making sure it's in a place. You know, I think I talked on the show last time, I left some heuchera and some other perennials in a pot under my porch, and the heuchera did come back, but everything else died because it didn't get any water over the winter months. So, you know, making sure it has a little bit of protection with a mulch or a leaf so it doesn't completely freeze, and, you know, making sure it gets that water. So I don't think that you should have much of a problem keeping it, you know, just outside.
Okay, cool. That'll work.
Thank you so much for your call. Up next, we have Megan on the line. Megan, go ahead with your question.
Yes, hello. Let's see. I have two quick questions. I just turned on the radio. I think you may have already talked about leaving leaves on the ground. I think that's what you said. Yes?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. I've started to do that the past few winters. However, I have two maple trees in my backyard that have been there for, you know, I planted them as young trees, and they've been there for about 10 years. And this past summer is the first time I've ever noticed on one of them these black spots. So I Googled it, and it looked like, based on what I could research, black tar spots or something to that effect, which is caused by a fungus. Yes. And then I kept reading, and they said that when the leaves fall, to get rid of that, those spores, to definitely clean up the leaves. So I just, you know, in this case, should I pick up the leaves then?
Yeah, as best possible, you want to try and keep those spores from proliferating in the soil and causing problems next year. But the nice thing about most of these leaf funguses, these leaf spots, is typically they're not going to be to the detriment of the overall health of the tree. And in cases when it's a large maple and you're not really up close to it like you would, say, an apple, and you don't notice it as much, the aesthetic impact is not as important. But in terms of leaving the leaves, ideally, as best you can, trying to clean up those maple leaves and keeping those from staying in the soil is a great idea.
Right, like before winter.
Correct.
As soon as they fall, like pick them up. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. And then a second question is, I have a Japanese maple as well. I just planted that last year. It used to be, when I first planted it, beautiful and rich red. Over the summer, the ends of the leaves turned brown and the leaves turned green.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I read that too, but I don't... did I not give it enough water? Is it just getting too much sun? Is that normal? I don't know.
I mean, I'm hearing that it could be a combination of a lot of things.
Yes.
This spring was really, really wet and then followed up by pretty intense drought and heat here. So the stress of the heat, the stress of potentially drought conditions, depending on how you were watering it, and then the humidity can all just kind of impact leaves, and they kind of wear their heart on their sleeve.
That's a great way to put it.
So if the overall vigor of the tree, or you're not seeing dieback on the branches, I wouldn't be too concerned, but I'd make sure you're giving it some supplemental water. Even now, as we're entering winter, just give it a couple more big soaks before our first like hard freeze, I'd say. And then in following seasons, just make sure if we are experiencing drought conditions to maybe give it a little extra attention. Japanese maples are kind of sensitive
creatures.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks,
okay.
Megan. Appreciate it. I think you make a great point. There's, you know, we keep talking about it, this kind of massive fluctuations in weather that we've been having really the last several years. We had drought this summer, but we also had, if you think back to February, we had a really warm February. I think it was actually the second warmest February, if I remember. And the only reason it wasn't the warmest is because it was a leap year, and that skewed the numbers.
Oh, my.
So it was hot and it was dry in February. And then last fall, we had drought in the fall going into winter. And then the fall before that was the same thing. So a lot of times what you're seeing on your trees and your plants this year right now doesn't always, you're not seeing the full picture. Obviously, the weather this year had an effect, but it's this overall prolonged effect that are just stressing our trees out. But I think that advice of keeping it watered, and I love that you said they keep their heart on their sleeve. That's super a great way to think about it. But good call. Thank you, Megan, for that. Up next, we're going to go to Craig. Craig, you're on the Garden Hotline. Go ahead with your question.
Yeah, good morning. My question is, we have about 5 or 6 hydrangeas, and now they're probably about 4 to 5 foot in diameter. When do you cut those back, and how far down do you cut them?
Great question. That I have another question to pose for you. Do you know what kind of hydrangeas you have?
I apologize. No, just flowering ones. That's all I know.
They flower. Are they? Did you buy them intending them for them to be like pink or blue?
Yes,
okay.
Pink and blue.
Then they're probably big leaf hydrangeas, which means they flower on old wood. So you want to wait to prune those until just after they bloom. And when you prune it, you just take it down to the next pair of forming buds. The problem with pruning it a little too late, or maybe in spring, is you've cut off those buds that have formed through fall and winter, and then it won't bloom. But just keeping the size in check, doing it after it blooms, and then you can still, I think, prune some of those larger, older branches that might not perform as well or might be crossing or diseased in any time.
Yeah.
So
that's a great question.
So this winter, just leave it stand as is.
Yep. Yeah, and it's important. Yeah, okay. So it's important to know when you're talking about any kind of pruning, whether it's these hydrangeas, which we have, you know, several different varieties that we have or different types that we have here in St. Louis, knowing when to prune is really knowing when these guys bloom. So, you know, Flo mentioned that those types of hydrangea, the big leaf blooms on the old wood, which, you know, it's very important to just think about when your plants are blooming, and that will really dictate when you're gonna prune. But Just make sure that you confirm. Go look up a picture of that big leaf hydrangea. Make sure that is that you have. And if so, then Flo's advice was spot on for you. All right. We're going to take a quick break. You guys are listening to the Garden Hotline, 104.1 KMOX.
Sponsored by Chesterfield Valley Nursery, a celebration of his beauty on 104.1 FM KMOX.
We're back to the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser West, and I am the Director of Horticulture for Pointer Landscape. And my guest today is Flo Smith, a horticulturist from the Kemper Center for Home Gardening at the Missouri Botanical Garden. We are answering, to the best of our abilities, all of your questions about gardening and fall tasks. And hopefully, I mean, I'll try to answer your lawn care questions, but hopefully we'll just stay away from those because I'm a lawn hater. But call if you need to. I'll do my best. 314-436-7900. That is the number to call. And we're going to go and talk to Chris because Chris has been waiting for a while. Chris, you're on the air. Go ahead with your question.
Hey, good morning. My first question is, what did lawns ever do to you?
That's a great question.
Anyway.
I actually don't mind the grass itself. I don't like all the chemicals that it takes to keep that grass and the resources and the time and all of that stuff. So it does look pretty. I will give you that. So what is? Go ahead with your question, though.
I will. I have a property that I've kind of divided in half. And the front half is, you know, I keep it cut down. We have horses, we have pasture and all that. But the back half, I've kind of let it go fallow, for lack of a better term, where it just grows up. And when it first happened, I had butterflies galore. And now, not so much. But what I usually had been doing is waiting till the spring, let all that tall stuff dry out, and then go through with a brush hog and take it down one time and all that. But I was wondering about this year, possibly when it dries out good, and it probably is at that point today and will be for a while, is just doing a high cut now and then doing a lower cut later. But what I'm trying to do is make sure I don't mess up seeding, reseeding, and all of the stuff that's going on back there. So I just wanted an opinion on doing that and thoughts.
I mean, that's a great question. I know that typically we always recommend that spring as far as cutback goes. You know, horticulturally, the plants will be fine if you did that. But the seeds, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, your seed heads are going to be there whether you cut them back now or cut them back in the spring. What do you think, Flo?
I agree. Unless there's things that are still like flowering or haven't quite formed their seeds yet, then knocking those back now doesn't do anything for reseeding. So, I mean, in my mind, it's easier to just do it all at once in spring.
Yeah,
but
it is twice the work, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't think horticulturally that would really make much of a difference. But also like that, what is that, you know, you're cutting all of that back and you're just going to leave it just laying on top of, what's there.
Well, that's kind of what I was thinking, is if I did a high cut now and a lower cut later, then I would wind up, instead of doing one big cut and having so much.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day. Yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Holiday PSA from DSW. This is your reminder that shoes are a gift. Literally. So unwrap something good. Like boots that inspire your next big adventure. Or cozy slippers that give you an excuse to stay in. Or sneakers that feel like pure joy. Because shoes aren't just shoes. They're exactly what you wanted. Let us surprise you so you can surprise them. Find shoes that get you and everyone on your list at prices that get your budget. At DSW stores or DSW.com.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at AboutAmazon.com.
Go down and lay down at once.
Yeah.
I'd kind of almost do a mulch on the second cut. So that was kind of the thought I had, and I didn't know if that would help the situation or not.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. In fact, you know, I'm interested. I think you should do it and then call us back in the spring
and tell us
how to go. But okay. Horticulturally, I think you're okay. And it might be a better way to do that. Maybe you don't do that every year, but, you know, every other year or every couple years you're doing that approach. But I'm interested to see how that goes for you. Thanks so much for your call. Up next, we're going to go to Mary Beth. Mary Beth, go ahead with your question.
Good morning. I think I've asked this before, but I have knockout roses. And, I mean, they are blooming like crazy right now. I had put coffee grounds and eggshells around them, and they just, like, grew a foot, you know. But they're at least 4 to 5 feet tall. Is it better to leave it till the spring to cut back, or can I cut back some before winter?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of people have a lot of different opinions about roses. So in my opinion, which is what you're calling to ask, so I'll say it. I like to leave my roses alone in the wintertime. And, you know, St. Louis isn't always the best place to grow roses. It's often, you know, we have a lot of pest and disease issues. They can get winter damage here. So I like to personally leave roses alone until that late winter, you know, the buds are starting to get really fat, and that's when I go in for a prune. If it is, you know, if you do want to do a little bit of pruning now, you could maybe, we always talk about that rule of thirds. I probably wouldn't even do a third. You could maybe even it out and make it look a little bit more tidy, but for me, leaving roses until, you know, February, March timeframe is the way to go.
Well, I think that sounds good.
It's less work now for you, Mary Beth.
That's what I'm looking at. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. Up next, we have Nancy. Nancy, you're on the line. Go ahead with your question.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for your program. And I have pine needles that seem to be because of the drought, dropping excess amount of needles on my grass. Is it harmful to leave that in on them all winter?
Leaving the needles on the grass?
Yeah.
No, it shouldn't be harmful. Most of the time when those needles are dropping, there's this idea that pine needles are excessively acidic and can harm your soil, but the reality is if they're already dying and breaking down, they're brown by the time they hit the ground, which means the microbes have already done what they needed to do, and so they're not going to really be acidic. What I would be concerned about is if there's a thick layer hanging out on your grass that might be might be snuffing it out. If that's the case, just take a rake to it and spread it out a little bit. But otherwise, I wouldn't be worried about that falling on your ground or on your grass.
Well, I thank you very much for your program. I listen to it every Saturday.
Thank you so much, Nancy, for the call. So, Flo, we've been talking about all of this stuff, but I want to get back to talking about you a little bit in the Kemper Center. One of the ways that I became aware of you in particular, I think I've known about the Kemper Center for a while, but you in particular run the Instagram over at the for Mobot's Home Gardening. Can you tell us a little bit about that? It is, if you guys aren't following that on Instagram, you're really missing out. First of all, what is the Instagram? How do they find you on Instagram?
It's at @Mobot_homegardening. Kind of a mouthful, but @Mobot_homegardening. And it should pop up, especially if you already follow the main garden.
But you guys are doing some funny content. I like that it's a mix of really good technical information, mm-hmm. but you're also doing some silly things as well.
Yeah. When I took over there, the world was kind of my oyster. There were no hard and fast rules on what they wanted me to do besides post and get people involved. And luckily our account has grown quite a bit, and I like to attribute it to the fact that I try and make things very entertaining. Some things are more funny than others, but really it's just my goal to make people laugh and make people think about plants and gardening a little bit differently, especially here in the Midwest. I mean, my coworker says if you can garden here, you can garden anywhere. And so trying to make people aware of things that might influence the good and the bad that's happening in their yard is really fun for me. And
well,
I love it.
You're definitely crushing it. It's a good mix of it's like really charming. So it like draws you in. You want to keep watching. And then you're like, I just learned something, because it is actually very good information. And not all of them are silly. Some of them are just straight up facts, but mm-hmm. in a very approachable, fun way. And I just, every time I see it pop up, I'm just super excited that you guys have got a new video up there. And a few, what is it, like last month during the drought, you guys did one. And it was like you were out interviewing the plants. Like
news segment, KCHG News. And we were talking about the drought and how really we should be watering our plants, but we wanted to put it in the perspective of the plants. So we went and interviewed some kind of raggy looking plants, and they were asking for water. And there was a prickly pear cactus that was kind of living its best life.
Yep, for sure.
Just changing perspectives.
Well, guys, we have to take a break. We're going to be back in a few minutes. Call us with your questions, 314-436-7900. We won't be interviewing plants in the next segment, but we can answer your questions. This is 104.1 KMOX. We are back to the second hour of the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West, and I am joined today by Flo Smith. Flo is a horticulturist from the Kemper Center for Home Gardening at the Missouri Botanical Garden. She works as one of the plant doctors who assists visitors with questions about gardening, plants, pests, and diseases. She also manages their Instagram account, aiming to educate people about plants while entertaining them. Flo moved here from Salt Lake City, Utah, where she worked in water-wise gardening, and is fascinated learning about gardening here in the Midwest. Flo, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
We have been here this morning talking a lot about fall gardening tasks, but let's talk about Mobot and the Kemper Center. What do you guys got going on out there? Anything good coming up for people out there?
Yeah, the Kemper Center itself just got a bunch of new annual plantings in. Looks really beautiful. There's mums everywhere. I know not everybody loves mums, but they sure are showstoppers.
Yep.
And then at the garden itself, we have some events coming up. Dia de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead, on November 8th. There's an event celebrating the rich tradition with marigolds, monarchs, altar making, and folkloric dances. And Garden Glow, the famous Garden Glow.
Beautiful.
Starts on November 15th. And I wanted to highlight that there is a sensory night on November 18th for those who may have some sensory sensitivities. So there's modifications to the show, quiet areas, and so forth. And then Smelling the Bouquet is an exhibition that's been going on for a few months now, but it goes through March. But it's at the Peter Sachs Museum, and it's an exhibit exploring the spectrum of scents with, I guess, 24 interpretive fragrances from the gardens themselves, wow, as well as botanical compounds renowned in perfumery.
Have you done that? Have you gone through and?
I haven't been able to yet, but I did the corn exhibition. February this year, and that was pretty stunning. And I had low expectations for corn, so for Smelling the Bouquet, I have very high expectations.
Yeah, it sounds like a really cool idea and a really cool event. So, you guys have like a garden hotline per se. What do you got? You guys, it's a horticulture answer service. Is that what you
correct
call it?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that and how we as home gardeners can kind of get in touch with you and utilize the services that you guys provide?
Sure. So the Horticulture Answer Service has kind of three modes of contact. One, and the one I support most often, is in person. You come into the Kemper Center for Home Gardening, and we have all sorts of resources there, a reference library, and then myself and usually another staff member, and also volunteers who are there to answer questions. And then we have our answer service available by phone and email, where you can email in photos of plants, give us your location, details about what's going on, and we can support you, and then phone calls, same way. The advantage to in-person and email is that we can ideally see what's going on and give more solid recommendations and diagnosis.
And I think, you know, that's often what we talk about here. You know, people call up and ask me questions and I can't see it. And that's always really helpful to be able to email or to, you know, flat out just bring it into you guys so you can see it and touch it. You know, one of the things that I love about MoBot and the website and all of that, I'm looking right now in front of me. You guys do this gardening by the month. It's such a helpful resource. And that's not all that you have. I mean, the website for the Botanical Garden and your Kemper Center has so many great resources. You know, there's this gardening by the month for October, November, which I have in front of me. And it, you know, lists things that you can do for your trees and shrubs, for your annuals and perennials. There's information on fruits and vegetables in your lawn and all these miscellaneous things. You know, I think there's like a bloom time situation happening. Like there's so many great resources for home gardeners or people that are just getting into gardening. You know, so I think that's really great. What is the website for? Where can people find information like that?
Yeah, they can go to gardeninghelp.org and that's where our email and phone number are as well if you wanted to reach out. But like you said, it's very robust. We have gardening by month. We have pest profiles, disease profiles, and anything that we put on, we try to have really good photos for. Because while we can't always be there to support people, we want people to be able to find that information and have that reliable content that we've generated for them to kind of enable them to be the best gardeners they can be, while also remembering that it's okay to make mistakes.
Yes.
And your garden might not be perfect, but that's what makes it great.
Yeah, I think I try to tell people all the time that, you know, gardening is just one big experiment.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're, you know, willing to experiment or be curious or take risks, you know, and I heard once, I don't know if it was when I was in college or not, but you don't actually truly know a plant until you kill it three times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it takes me a few more times than three in order to understand things. But one of the things I love about gardening and about the gardening community is learning all the time, just constantly learning and sharing information. And definitely, you know, the Missouri Botanical Garden, I mean, wow, are we lucky or what to have such, I mean, this Missouri Botanical Gardens is one of the best botanical gardens in the world. And we have it, you know, right here at our fingertips. And the fact that, you know, 5 days a week right now, even 7 days a week through some parts of the year, you guys are available for our home gardeners to ask questions is fantastic. So one more time, what's the phone number, email information for our listeners?
I don't remember the phone number off the top of my head, but the main website is gardeninghelp.org. And the email you can reach out to is plantinformation@mobot.org. or plantinfo@mobot.org.
And I did write down the phone number, so I can say it.
Thank
that
you.
Phone number to call up for your horticulture answers is 314-577-5143. We are going to answer your questions here as well. 314-436-7900 is the phone number to contact us. We're going to take a quick phone call and then go to break. We've had Jim on the line for quite a while. So, Jim, can you go ahead with your question?
Yeah, that's no problem being on the line and walk my dog. But my question is, I have three trees I want to cut back. Do I wait till the leaves all fall off or go ahead and do it now?
I think for most any plant, if you're going to be lopping off branches or doing anything dramatic, you want to wait until the tree is dormant. And a lot of times that's late winter or early spring. Now, depending on the tree, well, most trees, maple trees. Yeah. If you're cutting those back, it's going to initiate new growth. And that new growth is very sensitive and very tender and can cause more damage as winter comes up and nips it. So I'd say wait until it's dormant at the very least, or ideally late winter, early spring 2026.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Jim. That was a great question. We're going to take a quick break. 314-436-7900. Again, that's the number to call to talk with me or Flo. Ask us your gardening questions. You are listening to the Garden Hotline on 104.1 KMOX. We are back to the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West. I am the Director of Horticulture for Pointer Landscape. And my guest today is Flo Smith from the Missouri Botanical Garden. She's a horticulturist for their Kemper Center for Home Gardening. And we are here answering all of your fall questions. We have a lot of folks on the line, a lot of patient people. We're going to get to Jim first. Jim, thanks for your patience. Go ahead with your question. Jim, are you there? Maybe Jim.
Hello?
Yeah. Oh, there he is. Go ahead with your question, Jim. Thanks
I'm over
for waiting.
Here.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just heard the name of the company you work for. It's Pointer Landscaping.
Yep.
Okay. And the reason why I called for, I think I'm not very good at landscaping at all. In fact, I can probably kill an artificial plant. But somebody said I got boxwoods. I don't know why they're boxwoods. They're round, but I'd like to know when's the best time to trim them, if your company does that, and maybe they're getting too big for the area they're in.
Yeah, this is a great question. It is a funny, thing to think about why they're called boxwood. I'll let Flo probably knows why they call them that. But Pointer definitely does. We have maintenance services, so if you want to call up, we do ongoing maintenance services. And we like to set up a program for our clients so that we can do a better job of year-round servicing our gardens. But definitely do that. And as far as pruning those boxwoods, Flo, what's your thoughts on boxwood pruning?
I'm one of those people who is also not obsessed with boxwoods. So from my understanding, usually like spring and into summer is a good time to prune them. Mm-hmm. Late winter is not a good idea. Late fall is not a good idea. But pretty much from spring through, I'd say July is a decent time to be pruning them.
Yeah. So I always say with boxwood pruning, tax day to Labor Day. And it's actually not Labor Day. We're a little bit further because we're not as cold, especially the last few years. But what Flo said earlier when she was talking about pruning, when you make a cut, you're basically asking a plant to make more. And the boxwood is a great example of that, because when you prune a boxwood, it will flush out new growth really fast. So you need to have time for that plant to harden off any new growth that comes after pruning. So definitely within that window, spring and fall is a great time for boxwood pruning, but just making sure if you do it in the fall, you do it early enough that it can harden off. And then on extremely hot days in the summertime is not great. You can do some dormant pruning on boxwood. So once it goes dormant, I like February, early March time frame for that kind of stuff. If you want to do a size reduction or, you know, some depth pruning where you're going and thinning out boxwoods, it's a great time to do it. But as for right now with pruning boxwoods, I would definitely hold off.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Up next, we have, who do we got next? We have Bill on the line. Bill, go ahead with your question.
Hi, thanks for taking me. I planted about a 10-foot plum tree back in May, and due to a death in the family, it didn't get regular watering for a couple months this summer. And it showed some drought damage, the early dropping of leaves, and the exterior, the outer limbs were brittle. But the main limbs and the trunk stayed fairly flexible. So I'm wondering, is there anything I can or do should do this fall to try and get it to rejuvenate or get saved? Or
I'd say just make sure it's still getting decent water to it. And you can always do like a scratch test on the bark. So you can take like a knife or your nail and just scrape a bit of that bark to see what's living and what's not living. And it sounds like it's still living, but there's just some tip dieback. So I'd assume it'll be okay through winter as long as it's got a good couple of waterings. And then this spring is when you probably want to prune out anything that might be crossing or you don't want there, and then keep establishment watering it through the summer. It's still a new plant, even a year in the ground, and it's still really, really getting those roots happy. So as best possible, keep watering it. And if you're seeing any limb dieback or you're really uncomfortable with it, you could consider getting an arborist out there. I always recommend arborists for larger trees just because they're pretty huge organisms and they're truly tree doctors. So,
yep. Hope that helps, Bill. Up next, we're going to go to Dan. Dan, go ahead with your question. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, what's your question?
A couple weeks ago, you and a young lady were on the air, and someone was complaining about a crabapple tree or what have you.
Uh-huh.
And you guys were given names of alternatives to that tree.
Sure.
And both of you said the same name at the same time, and you guys laughed.
Yes.
Because you said it was the perfect tree. Do you remember the name of that tree?
Serviceberry. Yep. Serviceberry.
Oh, you Serviceberry.
I thought Flo was going to go with me on that, but she didn't.
So
I looked at her. She looked at me and mouthed the word Serviceberry, and then she didn't go
with me.
But no, it's Serviceberry, and it really is one of the most perfect plants out there. Can't recommend it enough. I have one in my yard. We plant them all the time, but it is a native. It gets berries after early spring. It's one of the first plants to kind of flower, white flower. It is fragrant a little bit and awesome fall color.
Yeah.
Love a Serviceberry.
And though, if you can get to the fruit before the birds,
so good.
It's delightful.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Now, does this tree like full sun, partial sun, shade?
I think it can tolerate a good range. I think it's like a true full sun, part shade understory tree. But given good establishment watering, I think it could tolerate full sun pretty well. But usually if you want good flowering and fruit off of something, it needs a good amount of sun. So I wouldn't say a full sun tree. I mean a full shade tree.
I got a spot that probably gets at least 6 hours of sun mid-afternoon.
That sounds perfect. It is, like Flo was saying, it's an understory tree. So when it's native or in its natural element, it's kind of on the edges of woodlands and things like that. So it definitely will do better with more sunlight, but it definitely doesn't want blazing hot, full afternoon heat. So it sounds like you've got a good spot for one. And again, can't recommend a Serviceberry enough.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, is that a tough tree to get a hold of?
Nope. There's a lot of them. If you want the specific native, true native, you might have a harder time finding that, but there are some cultivars out there that are readily available, but you know, just check out your local nurseries, or you're going to have a better time finding them at one of our local nurseries as opposed to, you know, going to one of the big box stores. Probably won't have something like that. So local nursery will also have probably better, healthier stock as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I can get my hands on one, would it be better to plant it now versus early spring?
I'd say, I mean, the best time to plant is always going to be early spring in my mind. That's when, like, Missouri's Arbor Day is the first weekend of April. It's a good time. Mm-hmm. There's usually natural rainfall that can do a lot of that supplemental watering for you. But fall is still a great time if you can work the soil and the soil isn't frozen. It's still a good time. You just still want to make sure you got a pretty wide hole for it and establishment watering.
Okay, that's great. Thank you so much, and I love your show.
Thanks, Dan. We appreciate the call. Up next, we have Nicole on the line. Nicole, go ahead with your question.
Hi, can you hear me all right?
Yep.
Okay. Love your show, too. I used to be at the Kemper Center at the doing plant information stuff for Glencop. But
oh, very cool.
I have a very large sycamore. I'm estimating 320 foot high. I just did a circumference of a limb that we just dropped yesterday because I have some deadwood in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 73 inches round in circumference. So we're dropping some limbs. I've lived in this property for 30 years, and I share an easement with UP Train Tracks. I don't know if you can hear the train now. Is it loud?
Nope.
Okay, good. So I had 18 trees when I purchased this home 30 years ago. Over the years, two limbs the size of what I'm looking at now, say 33 or 73 inches in circumference, dropped. And we just sawed it up, and luckily the swing underneath it didn't happen when kids were on it. But the thing is, I just thought, excuse me, there's a little bit of deadwood in it, like sweet gums drop branches on wires and knock out electricity in the front. But on my tree, we don't get a lot of tornadic winds here.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we didn't get hit by any of the tornado in May. But there's a few loose limbs. So I said, gee, we ought to get the deadwood out. It could drop on me. The limbs that have been dropping, we had two beehives. There's a raccoon hutch. There are termite ants in the limbs pretty high up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say 30 to 40 foot up. So it's getting, they're spongy like oaks. When you have to cut down oaks, bur oaks, these limbs are spongy. Mm. I had no idea that water was collecting in these. They're like cups. It rained a lot this summer. So they're like cups. So my question is, if I have a 320-foot sycamore in my backyard, there's nothing around it. There's no, luckily, wires or homes. Well, it's not going to fall towards my home, hopefully. But my question is, how would you take a sample? Like, could you take a core out of the lower part of it? It's not a champion tree. I measured it when I moved here. It could be now, but I don't think so. Could you take a core sample out of the tree to figure out how old it is?
I mean, in theory, you can, but
I can count rings on the limbs we dropped, but I can see when the drought years were.
Yeah, I'd probably encourage having an arborist do that to evaluate if it's worth it. I wouldn't feel comfortable taking a core sample out of a tree. I don't know about your thoughts.
So. No.
Yeah. Okay. And I can measure it, and I know kind of, I don't know how old it is. I figure there's a spring underneath here, because I'm not by a river, I'm by a creek, but that's about 3 football fields away from me. But I figure there's a spring under here, because don't sycamores and cottonwoods usually grow along riverbanks?
Yeah, they do. And I think what they do, like to grow in those kind of natural areas, but I think what Flo said is probably the best advice. If you, have a tree that large, I never personally think that tree work or tree stuff is like a do-it-yourself endeavor. I always try to get an arborist out there. But I would definitely recommend that for you to just get an arborist out there, especially if it's as big as you're saying. It might be a champion species. But
well, no, I measured it, and there's a bigger one down in Sacagawea Park.
Nice.
I'm sorry, Minnehaha, that you can climb in like a redwood in Northern California. But I have a person who worked for the Colorado Forest Service, and he was up in the tree yesterday, and he knows more about trees than some of the arborists I know.
Well, awesome.
He's going to come back today to finish up because, yeah, I didn't expect this tree to be so sickly. It's too bad. I mean, we're trimming out the dead and... Okay,
yep.
Well, I'll let you go.
Thank you. We appreciate your
question about the sycamore tree.
Yeah, appreciate your call. It's always interesting to talk about old, big, giant trees. We're going to take a quick break, guys. You're listening to the Garden Hotline on 104.1 KMOX.
This is the Garden Hotline, sponsored by Chesterfield Valley Nursery, a celebration of his beauty on 104.1 FM KMOX.
We are back to the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscape, and I am joined today by Flo Smith of the Missouri Botanical Gardens Kemper Center for Home Gardening. And we are talking about fall gardening and all kinds of things that you guys have called in with some really good questions so far this morning. And we're going to keep that up. We're going to go back to the phone lines and talk with Carol. Carol, go ahead with your question.
Yeah, good morning. I want to find out, I've got my mums, and I want to plant them and keep them for next year. And, I know I have to really, really, really mulch over them and this and that to keep them, but how do I actually plant them?
Planting a mum, you want to dig a space as big as, a little bit bigger than the root ball, ideally. And I'm assuming these are straight from the nursery?
Yes.
Yeah, so you'll kind of want to shake up the roots a little bit,
yeah.
Put them in the soil, pat the soil back around it, and then water it in. It's pretty straightforward.
Yep.
One more question. Do you trim a weeping willow tree?
That's another one of those that if you want to trim it or you need to trim it, if there's dead, dying, or diseased branches, you can do it any time, but otherwise you'd want to wait until... late winter or early spring for it. And I haven't personally trimmed a weeping willow before, but I imagine it's the same principles of like mm-hmm. crossing branches that are inevitably kind of rub and create wounds, or if it's too dense in spaces and not allowing a good amount of airflow.
Yeah. And weeping willows, we're growing those to be big, weepy, whimsical shapes. Mm-hmm. So like, pruning for shaping is definitely, I would say, for me, not recommended, but definitely pruning for health and maintenance is a good practice for sure.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering when it lays on the ground.
Oh, when it touches the ground?
Yeah, when it on the ground.
You could definitely prune it off if you don't want it touching the ground, but it naturally kind of self-prunes mm-hmm. For the most part. You can do it for sure. And again, it's a kind of self pruning thing where once it gets that long, it'll over time kind of break off. So you shouldn't need to do too much of that kind of pruning.
Yeah, I had no idea. Thank you.
Yeah, have Carol. Yeah, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Up next, we have Megan on the line. Megan, go ahead with your question.
Yes, hi. I actually called in last hour, and I almost hesitated, but they welcomed me through again because I have another question. So thank you so much.
No, Megan, we're hanging up with you. You only get one call per show. No.
Exactly. Right. Oh, that's so funny. Okay, so I'm the one with the maples in my backyard.
Maples. Yep.
Yes. Okay. And so my yard has turned into a shade garden because of that, which is fine because I've just transferred over to much more shade-loving perennials. And I also built my own trellis on one side and researched and found a climbing hydrangea that I thought would be perfect for that because I heard that they were good for shade. Yes?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. So I looked everywhere. I went to Kirkwood's nursery in Kirkwood, Missouri, because they were the only ones that I could find that housed them. And they already had some wonderful climbing hydrangeas that were established. They were about 3 feet tall. I bought one, brought it home. It's alive still. I planted it, you know, of course, at the beginning of spring. And maybe this has to do with the awful, you know, fluctuations with weather, but a lot of the branches died off. And again, it's still alive right now, but I trimmed off the dead, dying branches. And then I gave it a lot of water because I read online that that's what you're supposed to do. But I just want to ask, as we, of course, go into fall and winter, what I can do to keep it happy.
Sounds like you're doing everything right to me so far.
Oh, good. Okay.
As far as removing what's dead and dying and then keeping it watered, I mean, like transplant shock is pretty common and then followed by drought. A lot of trees and shrubs were defoliating and looking pretty sad this summer and into fall. But I think from my perspective and what I've heard, the best you can do is keep watering it, keep babying it, and then make sure when spring comes up, if we're not getting a good amount of rainfall every week, that you're still continuing that watering.
Yeah, it was a really hard year to be a new plant in St. Yes. Louis. So
That helps. Yeah.
There's a lot. So many. We've planted thousands and thousands of plants this year at Pointer. And even in our gardens that have irrigation, we have seen struggle with new plantings. There's just a lot of fluctuation. And if you think about it, these new plants, they don't have their roots established yet. So if there's too much water, if there's not enough water, they are almost immediately affected by that. They're not as as rooted in, so they can't take so much of those changes. So I think, you know, what Flo said is perfect. Just keep making sure that it's watered going into winter, and then hopefully next year it will flush out strong for you in the spring.
Okay, great. And I put a whole bunch of mulch on it for the winter, you know, at the base, and no trimming or anything of it in the spring. Just let it get more established and start climbing.
Yep. Okay, you can remove any of like the dead stuff that might have died. But other than that, just we want it to focus on its roots. New plants, young plants, we want to do minimal pruning so that they can focus as much of their energy on getting established and not repairing those wounds or pushing new growth.
Makes sense. Okay. I won't call again today. But
Megan, if you need to, we have only like 17 minutes left of this show. So if you want to get back in the back of the line, otherwise we'll talk to you next week.
All right. You guys take care. Bye.
Thanks, Megan. Okay, guys, we're going to take a quick break. We have one more segment left after this. We've really been enjoying our time this morning with Flo from the Botanical Gardens, and we'll continue that for one more segment after the break. This is the Garden Hotline on 104.1, the Voice of St. Louis. We are back, guys, to the last segment of the show. My name is Michelle Reeser West. In case you are just joining us, I have Flo Smith here, a horticulturist from the Kemper Center. We got a couple people on the line that we can get to. Tommy, go ahead with your question.
Yes, good morning. I would like to transplant some pawpaw sprouts. Seems like they get most of their nutrition from that side root and really don't have much root. Do you have any advice on transplanting those and giving the best shot for surviving, please?
I don't know that there's anything specific for pawpaws. I have heard that they can be kind of tricky to transplant. So if you have multiple, I would be trying multiple just so you have the best chance of more of them surviving. But just follow those same principles of giving it enough space so that when it reaches maturity, it can grow into its own, and then continue supplemental watering it and just watching out for any insects or pests. I mean, deer really love to eat little seedlings of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so if you do tend to have a lot of deer in your area, maybe consider getting some sort of cage for it. I know some people will turn over those hanging baskets, those metal hanging baskets over small plants, but, that would be your best bet for me.
Yeah, I think, you know, pawpaws and a lot of other native trees can have a really deep taproot. Just making sure, you know, I think pawpaws, I think you're right that they can be a little bit finicky with transplanting. I've tried to do it a couple of times. I have a client that has actually been pretty successful. They have some property out in Missouri, and they live here in South City, and they've successfully transplanted pawpaws. But I think it's really important to try to get as much of that existing root ball as possible. And, you know, like a bare root is possible to transplant. But if you can get as much root ball or as big of a root ball and even potentially a deeper root ball, that might be helpful in getting that to transplant well.
Okay, and I'd like to get some established in a timber. It's not possible to transplant, but what about growing them from seed? I know you need to kind of put them in a refrigerator over the seeds in over the winter, and score the outside covering. How much scoring is?
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day. Yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In app only.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at AboutAmazon.com.
Required to give it the best chance of succeeding.
Not much. I mean, if you take a knife to the edge and kind of nick a bit out of it, or even get like sandpaper and just rub until that outer coating is broken, not so much that you're tearing into all that good carbohydrates and stuff in the seed, but enough that you know that water can penetrate into that more readily and it can break through it a little more easily. I've used my nail before. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have to do too much.
Yeah.
And then a friend of mine said you just plant them on top of the ground. Is that right? Or should you put it an inch or so in the ground? Or, you know, how deeply should you plant the seeds?
They do have pretty big seeds, so I don't know if Michelle has other insight, but I'd say, dig them down just a little bit, or you can set them on the surface of the soil and get a good layer of compost and maybe some leaf litter on the top. But you just don't want it to dry out is mm-hmm. the concern.
So think about it in its natural setting, right? It's out in the woods. These guys will seed readily and make little babies, but the fruit falls onto the ground and it's kind of laying on top. And then we have the leaf litter that comes on top of it for kind of a light protection. And that's all it needs. You don't need to bury it, but definitely having some kind of leaf litter or compost lightly over the top to help keep it moist, so it, like Flo said, so it doesn't dry out.
Okay, and it would be best to to put like in the refrigerator
for sure
for the winter rather than just sow them now and put
yes
leaf cover. Okay.
Yep.
If you wanted to try both ways, you also could. You could try just seeing how nature does it for you and then having the backup of the ones in your refrigerator. Yep. I like to try both ways because you never know which way is going to work best. And if you have an abundance of them, why not?
Yeah. Science.
Yeah, I like to experiment like that,
yeah,
too. So that's good advice. Yeah, let's see how nature would do it. So, okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, up next we have Margie. Margie, go ahead with your question.
Yes. Good morning. I have a question. I was in Arizona last week, and my friend had a pot of this plant I wasn't familiar with called Mexican petunia. And I brought some cuttings home, and she said to just root them in water, you know, till you get the root system and then plant it. So do you know anything about that plant, and does it do well here?
Yeah, so we typically use this as an annual here. I don't know, you know, it's a cool plant. We use it in our containers a lot.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. So it's a long, taller, plant, and it has these, purple flowers on it. But yeah,
it kind of looks like bamboo at the base.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of got like a thin leaf. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a cool perennial for sure. Or annual, not perennial. It's an annual here. But yeah, I think just, I don't know how it will do in a pot inside all winter. You know, it's not one that I've tried to overwinter before, but definitely if you know, can get it to root, and then getting it into a pot and keeping it inside with plenty of sunlight and water. I'm interested to see how that goes for you.
You may not like the way it looks inside, but once it has the ability to thrive outside, that's when it'll probably do better, assuming it makes it through to that point.
What about light requirements while it's in this mason jar of water?
I would get as much as possible. These guys are native to Mexico and the Caribbean and like South America. So think about those kind of settings. Oh. So they want a lot of light and a lot of heat, actually. They like it when it's warm in the summertime. So like Flo said, this probably isn't going to look very good, but if you can keep it alive through the winter, then and get it outside in the spring, you probably have a better chance.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, good luck. That'll be our last caller. Flo, you made it through 2 hours of the Garden Hotline. I want to just reiterate, if you guys want to get in touch with Flo or the Kemper Center for Home Gardening at Mobot, can you tell us your contact information one more time?
Yeah, you can find our Instagram at Mobot_homegardening, and then our website is gardeninghelp.org, and the email you can use to contact us is plantinformation@mobot.org, all one word. And if Michelle, you could give the phone number one more time.
Yes,
thank
the phone
you.
Number, this is my job now. 314-577-5143. I almost said the line to call in here, but it's 314-577-5143. And don't give all of your questions to Flo and the people at the Kemper Center. You got to save some for Saturday mornings.
You got to keep calling the garden.
Calling in. But the botanical garden is such a great resource. And I cannot tell you guys how funny and informative that Instagram is. So also a great resource for you guys, along with the website and calling in. We really appreciate you coming in and hanging out with us on a Saturday. I hope we didn't scare you too much and you'll come back and visit us again.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it was really great. Guys, you can find me at pointerlandscape.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook at STL Plant Nerd. I did link to Flo's website and Instagram. So if you can find me, you can find Flo. And we're going to be back next week answering more of your gardening questions. I have Wendy Martin from Purple Martin Coaching coming in. She is a garden coach, a consultant. She works a lot with native-inspired gardens, rainscaping, bioswales, stuff like that. So she's going to be fun to talk to. And we'll see you next week on the Garden Hotline, 104.1 KMOX.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at AboutAmazon.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day.
We saw up to a 10x return on our TikTok shop ads. A few years ago, I started sharing my love for fashion on social media, and Willow Boutique was born. We're not just a place to shop. We've really become a community. TikTok allows us to find more people to have that great experience. I cannot imagine my business without TikTok. It's completely changed my life, and I could not be happier.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.